Hello, it is March 30th, 2015. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 5.2 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. I am Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. Every year, we have a very self-indulgent podcast here at the Will Leach Experience podcast. Last week, Joe Sheehan of the Joe Sheehan Baseball Experience, the Joe Sheehan Newsletter and Sports Illustrated did a big, all-encompassing, kick-ass baseball preview for the 2015 season. We went division by division, team by team. It's a good, solid hour, almost hour and a half. You will love it if you have not heard it. Joe is a genius, and I am very good at asking him questions to set up his genius and then staying out of the way. That is your baseball preview. We're a week away from baseball. It's going to be great. That is not what this podcast is. This podcast should come with a skull and crossbones on it and a big flashing warning danger sign. Achtung. This is my Cardinals fan freak podcast. I am here today with Derek Gould. We did this last year. He is the lead beat writer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch covering the Cardinals. He's been covering them for many years now. He is also the vice president of the Baseball Writers Association of America. He is a future Spink winner. He is as good as a beat reporter as you will find on Earth. And once a year, right before the season starts, he and I get together and I go through every little detail of the Cardinals I can find. I pick his brain under every single level I can. We get into the nit and the grit and the rotten yet heartwarming core of the St. Louis Cardinals organization. Now, I am fully aware that these days to say calling someone a Cardinals fan is a pejorative. I'm aware that we live in that world now. I can't change that. I even understand some of it. But I don't care because I'm a Cardinals fan. I love the Cardinals. This podcast is for Cardinals fans only. If you hate the Cardinals, or you just don't like being upset if you hate the Cardinals, this is not a hate listen podcast. Like, you'd have a hate listen podcast if it's like me and like some Cardinal fan being like, we're so great. Cardinals are the best fans in baseball. That's stuff that Cardinal fans do not actually do, but we all seem to do in the fevered imaginations of those who hate the Cardinals for reasons both justified and unjustified. That is not what this is. This is for diehard Cardinal fans, Cardinal nerds, Cardinal dorks. We are digging in deep into previewing the 2015 strictly from a Cardinals perspective. I'll probably ask about the Cubs and Pirates, but only in relation to how they affect the Cardinals. Okay? This is a podcast for Cardinal fans only. I cannot emphasize that enough. So listen, if you are not a Cardinals fan and you just really, really want to know what's going on with a team that is favored to win the National League Central, is one of the best teams in baseball, and has been to the National League Championship Series for quite a few years in a row now, that's fine. You will learn a lot about this team from this podcast. But if you don't care, or you hate it, if you're like, I actually kind of like Will Leach's writing, he works really hard, I like his stuff, he seems to have a good angle on things, but when he talks about the Cardinals, I want to stab him in the eyeball, this is not your podcast. This podcast is for Cardinals fans. Because I have Derek Gould, and nobody knows more about the Cardinals than today's guest, Derek Gould. All right, first off, Derek, this is the first time I've had the opportunity to congratulate you on being, since the first time you've been on the podcast, since you were elected vice president of the BBWAA. You are Matthew Leach and I, Matthew Leach, now fellow Athens, Georgia resident.
Right,
former,
right.
Former your colleague covering the Cardinals. He and I have long said that you are a future Spink winner, and we are certain that. You are the best beat reporter I know. No offense to Jennifer Langosh and all the other great beat reporters that cover not only the Cardinals, but other teams. But Cardinal fans are blessed to have you, and I worry about you because you work so hard. So the season hasn't started. Are you okay? Are you ready? Are you refreshed to start the season, or are you already tired?
I think that's something that, you know, not to give you a long dissertation on the subject, but I think it's actually something that's interesting about baseball writing is that spring training is probably the slog for baseball writers. You know, I mean, I think a lot of people have this vision of you go to Florida, you get out of the sun, you get out of the snow and you get into the sun and you're wallowing on beaches and getting a tan and all that. You know, spring with the advent of the web and social media and and basically having a superpowered computer in our pockets, in iPhones, has radically changed how it's covered. And it's also, you can argue with me if you want, but I kind of think it's the last bastion of ownership for the print journalist, where, and I include MLB.com, so Matthew Leach and Jane Langosh, I include them in that group because they're in the written word. Their word processor or their publishing is just a little different,
Yeah,
but
of
they're
course.
writers, first and foremost, and their stuff is published. And I think that, it's still an area of baseball where, excuse me, where print own because we can transport people here and we put in the resources that other places do not.
Yeah, and it feels like the live television, like, it's you bring more because you see, like, you can make the argument, like, if I've got an extra innings package or if I've got MLB TV, I feel like I'm seeing these games, and what you're bringing to it's a little bit different. Here, no one, it feels like you're just down there gathering information that none of us really have even like remote access to, and I feel like that
Right.
changes a little bit during the season. Yeah.
Yeah,
So
absolutely. The timing of it and and access. I mean, look, stuff on the backfields, they haven't yet put the ballpark cam on the backfields for workouts. So
right.
it's still an area where we can have some ownership, and I think that's something that has certainly ramped up the workload and the time commitment, but I think the payoff has also grown exponentially. If you can do spring training well and you can transport your readers there, then you're building a following and an understanding of the quality that you're going to provide for the season right from the get-go. And then it's a matter of maintaining it through October and this year through November.
All right, well, I look forward for the season to start so you can go on vacation, which is sort of what
Right.
it
I get
seemed
my
like.
mornings back.
So, all right. So let's just dig in. We're gonna go through nit and grit here. So I know
Good.
that we're gonna go through it all. I've already warned listeners that if you care casually about the Cardinals, but not a lot. You probably isn't your podcast, and if you maybe if, like these days, this sounds like a popular hate listen podcast. I feel like people will hate listen to a podcast about the Cardinals now, but we are Cardinals nitty gritty here, so we are going straight up. We're pretending that I'm impersonating the best podcast in baseball
Oh, okay.
for a day. So we're going nitty gritty. First question, obviously the big news that happened over the weekend. Garcia is hurt. Now it's kind of funny to see him, to see Jaime, because the minute that there was any sort of bad news, everyone was like, "Oh, there it is, he's done. Forget it, it's all over." Garcia, this
Yeah.
is the moment we were all waiting for. I saw him today, kind of back off a little bit, say, "Listen, this is a minor thing." Is it
Yeah.
a minor thing? Is certainly Matheny's comments didn't make it sound like it was a minor thing, or if it was, it slowed him down enough. Is he out of the rotation mix for the foreseeable future?
For the foreseeable future, yes. But I will add that they don't need a fifth starter for the foreseeable future. So this has them rethinking sort of what they were going to do with that spot. And it also has them kind of have for, they're forced to confront now this notion of, okay, well, those off days would be a really nice way to ease Michael Wacha, Adam Wainwright into the season without pressuring them already to go every fifth game. But, they got three off days there right off the start, three off days in their first three series. So they're real limited as to when they need a fifth starter. They can keep a guy back here, and now Jaime has given them the opportunity to do that. He can stay in extended spring or require a rehab assignment and then be available in the middle of April when they need that fifth starter, however they want to do that. So he's out of it for the foreseeable future. He's left the door open now for Carlos Martinez to walk through. Marco Gonzalez is in an interesting spot because he's sort of their fail-safe for a lot of different reasons. If they need a lefty reliever, he's the guy. If they need a fifth starter, he's the guy. But all things being equal, they'd probably like him to be the ace in Memphis. And that, I wouldn't get too wrapped up in that because there's a good chance that he could be the ace in Memphis to start the year and still make 20 starts in the majors for them, given how things go. So, Jaime is put himself on a schedule that has them thinking very little chance, if any chance, probably no chance, of opening day. And he's done this on the day where it was likely that he was going to go through the fifth starter coronation. I mean, he was supposed to start on Sunday, and I wouldn't have been shocked, Will, if he, after that game, they said, he's our fifth starter, let's have a fine week of, you know, getting ready for the season. There's the one question answered, off we go. Instead, he has taken 2 days of break and likely a third day for evaluation, and then they don't know what to expect from him. And they have, he has, by doing this, only reinforced what everybody already knew, is that he is start to start at best.
So if that would have happened, because I think that I got that impression, I certainly got the impression from your coverage and Jin Langosh's coverage that that was the case. If that would have happened, and that's my first half of this question is if that would have happened, and the second half of the question is, now that it didn't happen, what does that mean for Carlos Martinez?
So if what would have,
if they would have anointed him, if they would have anointed him, oh, what would that have meant for Carlos Martinez? And two, now that they did not anoint him, where does Carlos Martinez stand?
Okay, so what that would have meant for Carlos Martinez is a long discussion about if he is the long man swing man in the bullpen and Carlos Villanueva leaves the Cardinals and Carlos moves into that spot. So Carlos for Carlos there. So Martinez would be in the spot that Villanueva now has. What Garcia's now delay means is that Carlos Martinez has a chance to be the fifth starter if the Cardinals elect to need a fifth starter. That's sort of where this is trending, is it's a decision between Martinez as the fifth starter or not having a fifth starter. And it's not entirely on Martinez whether that, you know, who makes that decision. Some of it will be here in the next few days with Garcia's readiness. If there's a question on can he get past 80 pitches and be okay, then they're going to look in a different direction. But if they think of this as, oh, you know, this is just a hiccup that that several pitchers go through. We've seen pitchers around baseball, you know, go through this where they have a dead arm or a fatigue or they just have to take a moment to scale it back a bit. But then they'll be ready to press on and he goes another 80 pitches and then is able to get 100 pitches in the next outing and he recovers well. Then, you know, then they can go with him, and that puts Martinez in an interesting spot again where it's a decision of is he best in the bullpen or is he best being prepared as a starter in AAA? What alters that equation is Jordan Walton. You know, a year ago at this time, Cardinals didn't have an eighth-inning guy. Pat Neshek had not emerged. He was going to make the team, but they weren't looking at him as a guy in that primo eighth inning spot. That took about a month and a half to establish. This year is way different. Not only do they have Jordan Walden, who they acquired in the four-player trade from Atlanta, Will, but they also have Seth Maness, who has pitched really well this spring. And I will continue to say that, you know, there's every year you leave spring thinking, man, I should have written more about that guy because of what he's going to mean to the season. And I think Seth Maness is that guy, is the guy we didn't write enough about. He's pitched very well this spring. And so you have two guys ahead of Carlos Martinez for that eighth inning spot, which kind of leaves open the possibility of developing him as a starter in Memphis, right?
And this is what I find curious is, let's say, you know, when that Braves trade happened, apparently the Braves said they wanted Martinez, right?
They did
want Martinez. So theoretically speaking, if the Cardinals would have said, okay, you could have Martinez, if they'd have made that trade, there's no way we're talking about Shelby Miller not being in the rotation, right? Like Shelby Miller, if Shelby Miller is the guy that stays, there's no discussion, correct? Like Shelby Miller would be in the rotation, or am I incorrect in that assumption?
Well, that's an interesting, I don't think that Shelby would have been a given. Okay. I think they would have said it's his to lose or Jaime's to take away from him.
Okay.
But you're right. As of today, you're not talking about, hey, they have their five starters. and off they go.
So that, so my point of that is it seems strange to fight to keep, to make say, listen, we're not giving up Martinez, you can have Miller, but then when we're in the spot that we're in now, Martinez still, is this just a matter, what did Martinez have to do to get that fifth starter spot, particularly since last year he had an incredible spring and still didn't get
right.
it? Like, what, is there anything he could have done, or was it just when Garcia emerged, it just, the path of least resistance was to give him that spot, even now with the injury thing still kind of hanging in there?
I don't know, man. If you rank them by who pitched the best of spring, you know, from like just take them without their contracts, right, without their name, without their service time. If you just did a blind taste test, and I'm not just talking about stats, but say
stuff,
efficiency, all those things. It would be a pick'em between Gonzalez and Garcia.
Yeah,
and on overwhelming stuff, you'd probably go with Garcia.
Yeah,
and that puts Martinez at third.
Right.
So, and that's not to say that he pitched poorly. Right. No, he pitched fine. But he didn't have outings like he needed to have until this past Friday up in Vieira, where he pitched around trouble. He wasn't undone by it. He didn't create trouble of his own, you know, for the most part. You know, there were errors and misplays and stuff behind him. And, you know, leadoff walk bit him, but he really kind of controlled that inning, brought it back, you know. He had a pitch to attack left-handed batters the second time he saw them. That's something we didn't see before. He got past 20 pitches and was effective for the next 20, 30, 40 pitches. That's something we hadn't seen before. He got more efficient as the game got on and was able to go deeper into it. That's something that they hadn't seen before. And I'm not just saying that we didn't see that because he didn't have the pitch count or the arm strength to go. He just didn't have the efficiency. His best start, you know, He had two really good outings before then. One of them was the first outing when he was just ruthless with 20 pitches, and then he was done. But, man, they were 20 really good pitches, but that's all he had in him. And then the other time, the shared characteristic of his two outings that were good before this most recent one, was that Yadier Molina was behind the plate. And Molina has a way with Martinez and can direct him and calm him and influence him. And on Friday, what added to how good that outing was for Martinez was Tony Cruz was behind the plate. So you had a lot of things that you hadn't seen from Martinez come together Friday, which was an efficiency, an ability to avoid these just, you know, mushroom cloud innings, and a way to attack lefties with that changeup, which was its best, the best it's been in a long time. And he had command of it. And then Cruz behind the plate. So I think he had to do that multiple times. But what the Cardinals couldn't count on at all, and even this is true February 14th, is what was Garcia going to give him? And, you know, Garcia at his best when he's healthy, it has been one of the best left-handers in the league. Now, Carlos Martinez might be one of the best young pitchers in the league, one of the best young potential starters in the league, but that's not the best left-handers in the league. And so it was a case of, look, Jaime's, when healthy, is the better pitcher, and there's nothing Carlos could have done to overcome that.
And so, and this has not, until we know what they're going to do with the fifth starter situation, we don't really know how much this Garcia injury, minor, or if it's as minor as Garcia seems to think it is, though, why would he? I mean, like Garcia,
right.
If it's as minor as he seems to think it is, we won't really know until they make that fifth starter decision.
Yeah. I mean, and even then you might not. I mean, I'm really of a mind that how they open this thing is not how they're going to close
it. Right. Yeah. But is there a danger of messing? Like, this is now 3 years where Carlos is kind of, you know, maybe he's going to start, now he's relieving, now he's here. Like, is there, I forget Martinez's emotions on this, though I certainly, if I were him, I would feel like the goalposts are constantly being moved on me.
Cause right.
Like, I would certainly feel that way, or at least, I'm sure they've explained to him, and he may very well understand. So I'm certainly speaking from the outside, but I can see how he could feel that way. It does feel like now we're in year three, really, of him still not getting that rotation spot, even when we've cleared out, seemingly cleared out a spot for him in the offseason and not gone after these free agent guys. It does seem reasonable. Is it okay? Is it going to mess it up to have like another year of bouncing back and forth, or not?
I mean, I think it's a fair question on his trade value. You know, I mean, to these teams have been really interested in him, be it the White Sox, Phillies, Atlanta. I'm sure there were more. But there were teams really interested in Carlos Martinez. And, you know, eventually those teams who have dreamed of having him as a starter and see his stuff and think that that's where he'll ultimately be, they might take a moment, take a breath, and go, wait a minute, he can't even be a starter for the team that knows him best. So, you know, what exactly are they going to try to get him? I think that's a fair question, but I think he's made of sterner stuff than probably he gets credit for.
Well, no, I mean, listen, you're the one that went down there this year there after that. So, like, I feel like no one's more qualified to answer that to you. You going down to the Dominican after Oscar Tavares' death. So you certainly have been there during some pretty emotional times.
Yeah, I mean, and he was really emotional. But, I mean, I've seen him. Look, he knows he's good.
Right.
So one way to tap into, like, hey, we know you're good too, is to let him be the pitcher he wants, or go. I mean, look, they've convinced Trevor Rosenthal he can make a pretty good living as a closer.
Yeah.
Carlos Martinez can make a pretty good living as a closer, you know, with the stuff he has. So I don't know. You know, it's all in the presentation at this point, you know, and I don't think he's going to be hurt or his performance is going to hurt. I think he might pitch angry, but okay.
Okay.
So
yeah.
What? Yeah, I mean, he pitches with an edge anyways. You know, I think you know, he's also very young. It seems like he's been around forever, but I think that's because he started pitching for the Cardinals when he was 12. You know, no, I'm kidding. But he's in his early 20s still.
He's like he has like the Jose Oquindo, very early young.
Right.
So, yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he and Marco Gonzalez are the same age, pretty much.
Right. Right.
And we all talk about like, oh, well, Marco Gonzalez, if he's a starter a year from now, that's really good.
Right.
Okay. Well, if Carlos Martinez is a starter a year from now, that's pretty good too.
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely.
I mean, he would be a starter in the rotation at the same age as a Michael Wacha was. So. I don't know, you know, so I don't think that there's some, like, this is going to detonate his confidence or this is going to be a drag on him. But I do think that it kind of alters the trade market for him, which was the risk the Cardinals knew they were taking. And they were aware of that. And part of why they made those decisions was because they thought his upside, not, I don't think if you asked the Cardinals, if you got them and said, okay, who has a better 2015, you know, put them on a lie detector and said Carlos Martinez or Shelby Miller, I got to imagine most of them would say Shelby Miller. Yeah. But if you ask them who has a better next 3 years, they're going to say Carlos Martinez because they made that bet.
Right, right.
They made that bet. But if you ask them who's going to have the better 2015, I think they all recognize, in fact, I know they did because I asked them and wrote a story about it, that Carlos Martinez was going to go through the same learning curve, the same lessons that they just went through with Shelby Miller. So it was essentially like trading a guy who was about to graduate for a sophomore and saying, yeah, let's go through it again, guys.
Right. Okay, good. That's good to know. That's good. That is important to remember that Carlos Martinez is not like a ticking bomb that we have to hurry up and like figure out what to do. There's not a timeline. You know, he doesn't expire. He's not milk.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. Right. That's right. That's right.
Okay. Well, I think
he doesn't have a born on date, and you're not worried about it getting stale.
Exactly. So that leads in to, I think, another key question. You know, every single time, it's weird because I've had people. One of the things that during the offseason, everyone was like, "Why are they? They're going to go after Scherzer, right? They're going to trade for Hamels." And you know, the Cardinals kept saying, "No, we're not. We have like a lot of starters." I think we clearly saw why they didn't do that and why they still haven't done that. But it does seem like in baseball, every time you feel like you have a lot of starters, you end up not having a lot of starters.
Right.
Particularly when it comes to the Cardinals here, because the two major question marks we're talking about, wow, they go seven deep starters. But you do have certainly health question marks at the top of that rotation. Wainwright looked okay in his first two starts. To me, observing, not being as close as you are in this, I've actually come away more relieved about Wainwright, less because of Wainwright and more because of Waka. In that
Oh.
Waka seems to look so good
Yes,
that
he
it
does.
feels like it would have to, maybe for the first time in a while, you don't need Wainwright to be this plow horse the way he's been. You can take it easier with him. Is that an accurate way to look at it? And am I accurate in seeing how good Waka, in describing how good Waka's been?
I wouldn't be surprised if neither of those two guys you mentioned leads the team in innings and is the plow horse you're talking about. I mean, I think that's Lance Lynn. I see where you're going completely. I think you should feel at ease with Wainwright because at this point in time, everybody ought to know what Wainwright does and probably can get a pretty good read on how he feels about things. I would agree with what you said about Waka is this rotation looks a lot different, mainly because long about week two of spring training, we stopped asking about that shoulder that Waka had. And I know he felt like everybody asked him about it, but man, new people come through spring training, national riders come in, and when you throw the last pitch of a season and it's hit for a home run for the Giants to win the pennant for the first time since, Dan DeLillo's underworld, or whatever, the Giants win the pennant. I was trying to make a literary reference
I'm
there
with you.
for
I'm with you. I know what you're
a
talking about.
All right.
My chuckle came through.
Okay, all right. There were like five listeners that went, "Oh, okay, yeah, I read
No,
that. I read that opening. I
we're
didn't finish that book, but I read it. I
I'm
read the opening."
aware.
Anyway, so I mean, you're going to get questions when that happens. When you are part of history, often when you're on the downside of history and spring training comes around, you're going to get questions about it. And so I see where he's coming from, but we stopped asking because it was pretty apparent early on that, oh, he didn't have to change his mechanics. No, he's not slowed down by this. Man, he really did work on his strength to make himself a whole lot more durable. And that whole combination of tilt and changeup that he's got going is just wicked. He didn't have a changeup when he came back from the injury last year. He had a changeup. I mean, he was throwing hitters off on other fields with his changeup during live BP. There were guys taking BP on a field, 100 yards away, and they had their timing fouled up. So he's done a lot this spring to really not just, there's got to be a better word, not just prove his health, but assert his health. Health, is that a good way to put
No,
it?
I think so. I definitely, definitely.
Yeah. All right. So I see where you're going with that. But, and here, this is an important but. I'm not sure he's a 200 inning guy. I'm not sure they let him throw 200 innings. If there's a 200 inning guy on this team, I mean, Lackey has been. Maybe he can be again. Wainwright certainly is. Lynn has to be, I mean, Lynn's got to be that guy, and he has been, and he can be again. But you have the potential for three 200-inning guys and the potential in Waka to have a guy who has a dynamite 180. And that's a really good rotation. And your fifth starter can be a pell-mell of whoever shows up. It can be fifth starter ad hoc, and they'll be good.
And it's all upside at that point because it
Right,
is
that's right.
so
They're
it
all
is
that's all lagniappe, as we say.
yes and, but yeah and but Wainwright from you from what you've seen, he's certainly working his way in, but everyone seems generally comfortable with where he's at.
I mean he's gonna be Adam Wainwright. I mean this whole I mean he had the abdominal strain, which was legit, and there was big concern about that, mainly that it was gonna be a sports hernia, but that passed and he hasn't had any setbacks then, and that kind of forced him to go on the schedule that he was going to be forced onto anyway. I mean, what they didn't they he wasn't thrilled about it, but they were going to slow him down. I mean, they might have a conversation with him about how many starts he would like, and he would go, "You know what? I'd really like five." And they would say, "All right, how about three?" And he'd go, "I really like five." And they'd be like, "All right, how about three? I would really like five. All right, how about three? All right, can we settle at four? Sure, we'll write you in for four, but you're going to get three." I mean, and maybe he would have gotten four, but they were going to have him on a real scaled back. I mean, he was bored to tears before that abdominal strain, because they had them on such a scaled back plan.
All right, so okay, so we've covered the rotation, I think, pretty fully. It's funny because, you know, one thing we always talk about are indispensable players. We clearly saw last year, you know, I remember getting an argument with someone last year of whether we all know that Yachty is the most indispensable player. The question is whether Peralta had approached him. There may be an element of that, but still, to me, Molina, we saw not only in the regular season but in the postseason how things kind of go awry. When Molina's not in, he's lost a lot of weight this offseason.
A lot.
I've not seen my television's not quite HD enough from the spring training camera to where I can really tell. It's like when he showed up with the tattoo one year. I really couldn't see it till he got to Bush. I feel like I really couldn't see it clearly till he got to Bush. I feel like I won't really see that till he's there. Is he different? Is the idea for him to make him healthier? Is he going to be a singles hitter now? What is Yachty now?
Well, his first extra base hit today, it was a ground ball past a backhand stab by David Wright at third base, and it kind of took a really squirrely hop, and that was a double. So first extra base hit for him. I mean, I think that's a fair question, and it's sort of an unknown until you get into the season. I don't put a whole lot with a guy like him or Holiday or Hayward to a certain extent. You know, you don't want to put too much stock in, like, oh, well, how many extra base hits did they have in spring? Oh, they didn't have any? I'm not sure that's like a tell-all for what they're going to do in April, May, June, when things are a little different. And, you know, they're really going through progressions here. But he's lost a lot of weight, man. He is his body is changed. And I don't just mean like changed like 5 years ago when he hired a nutritionist and slimmed down and lost body fat. He is, he's a middle in, I mean, he's got the body of a middle infielder.
That's so weird.
In some ways. I mean, his waist size is considerably different. Not sure if he had to get a new chest protector, but his chest protector certainly hangs differently on him. You know, he's a guy who, I mean, he lost a significant amount of weight. And, you know, the word around camp was that he was trying to send a message that he was not going to, you know, play their reduced schedule, that he wanted to lead the league in innings. And this is what Matheny told me. Matheny told me that he took one look at Yachty and all the work he'd done and the weight he'd lost. And he said, that says to me that's a catcher that is going to catch 135 games and doesn't want to hear about days off. And maybe that's what he intended. Maybe that's not what he intended. But the manager said, that's what I'm hearing. That's what I'm hearing when I see him. And, you know, we'll see what that means for his offense. This team shouldn't be as reliant on his offense as last year's team certainly was. You know, it's sort of like a bonus. Like 2 years ago, it was where he put together the MVP caliber year with kind of a all-rounded game. There's no coincidence that that team also did so well with runners in scoring position and scored so many runs, led the league in runs. It was because they had a guy like Yachty, who they don't exactly count on for a lot of offense, providing a ton of offense. So he's kind of a bonus, but they don't need a lot of offense from him. He's not even really going to, you know, sometimes you see him bat cleanup. There were times a few years ago, that's not going to happen this year unless something else goes really wrong. I can think of three guys that they'd have bat cleanup before him. So, you know, I don't know. I think that's something to watch develop. You know, is he going to be a singles hitter here? Can he drive the ball? Did losing weight cost him muscle but gain him durability? And is that a trade-off that the Cardinals are willing to have because he can influence so many games behind the plate, far more games behind the plate than he can at the plate?
Well, as long as Yachty remains as cuddly as I found him the last few years, I don't mind if he loses some weight.
What is that? What do you mean?
I don't know. I just find him cuddly. I think that's a generally shared thing. People love Yachty. Like my mother, she always says she wants to hug Yachty. It might just be the name.
Is that like Yogi?
Yeah, I think so. It's possible. Yachty and the, I don't know. Anyway, all right.
That's interesting. Yeah, can I ask a question? Can we turn the tables here?
I've no comment, but go ahead.
Why?
I'm only here because they pay me.
Why Peralta? Why was Peralta the second part of that?
You know, to me, I think there's a general Kosma fear. I think, yeah, the general cosmosphere. And I think I understand. And, you know, I was going to hold off on getting into this, but might as well get into it now. The idea of that utility infielder spot. I know they just sit down Dean Anna. I know Ty Kelly's just kind of is one of the last people fighting for one of those last bench spots.
Very intriguing guy, though.
Yeah, Kelly, he takes a lot of pitches. That's his thing, right?
Yeah, very high on base percentage, swings at very few pitches. Really.
They can't play short, right?
Okay. I mean, Descalso, like Descalso.
Yeah, well, Descalso could not play short, but they kept putting him at short. Are they going to do that with Kelly?
They put him there, sure. Okay, but here's the thing. They don't need to because they have Cosma.
Yeah, right. So if Cosma has options, is he on this opening day roster?
Yes.
Yes, even if he had options.
Well, he had a good spring, man.
Okay. Yeah. All
right. And now it's sort of a chicken and egg thing, though. So he's out of options, and Matheny really used him a lot and said, look at all the different things I can do with this guy. Look at all the different things he can do. Now, if he has options, does Matheny use him in that same way? That's harder to tell. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No,
like the fact that he was out of options put him in all these situations where he could shine this spring, and Matheny really got to showcase the things that Cosma could do off the bench. I'm not sure that they put that same effort in if he has options.
But it still feels, whether he hit, and he did hit the ball well this spring, I think there's a pretty large number of major league at-bats that make a pretty strong case that this is not a particularly great hitter. So,
no, but that's the thing is, think of all the things he can do off the bench that don't involve hitting.
Yeah, and I understand that, and that may bring me into my next idea, which is Cosma's playing left field a couple of, they played him around a lot of ways. To me, you know, I'll put it this way. If you've got Cosma as that all-around guy that even you can put in the outfield and even you can pinch run, to me that calls into question Borges. And I feel that if you've already got a guy, like, and this brings it to the center field question. You mentioned in one of your pieces that it's possible that Randall Grichuk could be played center field on opening day.
Sure.
If that's true, why is Peter Borges on this roster?
It's a fair question. You know, and I'm not sure that, I mean, I think that's a real fair question. It's not one they have to answer right now, but it's one that over time they can answer. It's certainly there certainly is a market for Peter Borges, you know, or at least there was. There were teams interested, and give it a month and there'll be teams interested again. You know, I don't know. I think that there probably isn't a player in camp who has altered how the Cardinals see his future more than Randall Grichuk this spring. And that's not to say that he entered with no future with the team and now is entering with a future. He entered with a pretty intriguing future with the team, and he had a really standout spring. I mean, if I'm listing the players who have had the best all-round springs, and I don't just mean like performances in games, but I mean kind of all-round, what they're trying to do with their game and what they showed, Grichuk is number one, and Cosmo's probably in the top three, maybe top four. But Grichuk is number one, and number two isn't close. What he's done. So I think you do have to kind of consider where there's a redundancy, Will, and you make a good point. I think, you know, to the question of like you know, as we kind of skitter around here a little bit.
So yeah, we
but like your point about Peralta being second to Yachty, I would agree with you to a certain extent, but I would like caution that the position is a little different than the guy I'm going to mention. You know, Peralta to Cosma is a significant gap offensively. I mean, it's a gulch offensively because you're talking about a power component to, you know, an eighth hitter who struggles to produce. But Cosma's good enough with his glove that at least you're going to get some reliability you're somebody reliable at a prominent defensive position. I would argue that that might even the scale a little bit at shortstop, where at third base last year, that didn't exist. You know, because that's a position you have to get offense from. And if Matt Carpenter went down, the replacement was A, probably going to be just the same defensively at third, and definitely was not going to be the leadoff hitter. Oh, and definitely was not going to be the best leadoff hitter in the National League. So I think the gap there was more sizable.
And I think that's fair. I don't know if I can watch Cosma hit anymore. like I know he's hit well this spring, but it just feels like there's been you appreciate his defense, and I understand. I do see keeping him on the roster. I absolutely do get it.
Yeah.
I don't see playing him in left field just because he can do all of these different things now.
No, he never will.
Oh, I know, but it does. It's funny. Like, you know, I was joking with Will Haraway, who is my friend who actually wrote the theme song to this podcast and is the guy along with my father that I constantly text during Cardinal games. And one of the questions he wanted me to make sure to ask was, who is the guy that Matheny, and we're going to get into Matheny, who is the guy that Matheny is going to play this year that's going to play or not play that drives us crazy? It was Tavares a little bit, and Borges and Wong at the beginning of last year. Is there a guy that we're like, is Cosma going to get an at-bats over the guy, someone that we're screaming to get in there, or is the lineup generally set until there's injury enough that there's not a lot of wiggle room?
Yeah, I don't see this. Actually, I think this might be the more well-rounded but also more definitive, most definitive roster he's had in that regard. I think there's an element in play here. You know, John Jay has earned the right to be the starting center fielder. No one is doubting that.
Yeah.
Now, if Randall Grichuk is on the roster, and at this point, how could he not be? You know, where do you play him? And you're not going to play him in left. You're not going to play him in right. So can you get over that hump of John Jay being the starter and recognize that, hey, John Jay's done pretty good when he starts in a part-time role and eventually has to win the job from somebody? You know, maybe there's an element of that here where Jay knows how to play 4 days a week. Randall plays 3 days a week, or how that breaks down. So, I think there might be some of that. There certainly will be that at first base. I think if you're looking for lineup angst, you'll find plenty of it to text about at first base. Until one of those guys goes on a hot streak, and they're both going to be streaky hitters. So it's just a matter of – and actually Matheny's mentioned this to me and to some of the other writers that's going to be a challenge. Or he said that's something that he has to be really good at, is not just figure out who's going to start at first, but to recognize when one of those two guys is on their streak and play the heck out of them.
I'm curious because I've always wondered, you know, let's say Reynolds – I don't think he's going to do this, but let's say Reynolds goes Wigginton up. If you will. If that happens, I've always been surprised they've never looked at Grichuk at first base. The guy mashes left-handers. It's always seemed like a surprise they would not at least consider that. But is that a Piscotty thing if they do that?
Yeah, Piscotty's better at first.
Okay.
Yeah, better off. Why – you can help me out here. Why does the notion persist that first base is easy?
That's fair. Well, I guess that's fair. I think that's a fair point. But we've certainly seen people – it's been the place where you've often seen people transition. Nobody says, hey, let's get this guy into an easier position. Let's put him in center. Like, you've seen for first base.
Yeah, the defensive spectrum. Yeah,
I agree that it's not easy, but certainly – it's, you know, no one puts Scott Hatterberg in center field because you need his bat in the lineup.
No, I know, but you also, I get it. You put Adam Dunn at first base. Right. Maybe that's where it comes from.
Yeah.
The White Sox put Adam Dunn at first base, or Reds did, or whoever did, and now we're all cursed for that. I get a lot of emails saying, why isn't Matt Holliday playing first base?
Yeah, well, that
Matt Holliday isn't playing first base because Matt Holliday hasn't seen a ground ball in his professional career.
Right.
You know, and ask him about it. He was drafted as a third baseman, and I believe that was the last day he was called a third baseman. Randall Grichuk, how many ground balls has he seen? You know, and yeah, he's athletic, and he has some of the ideas and some of the tools that can make it happen, but, sure.
Yeah.
But to say, well, I'll just put them out there.
Yeah, yeah. And if they haven't done it in spring, they're not going to start in May.
Whereas Piscotty, you know, he can play third. He can field a ground ball. He just has trouble with the throw.
So, okay, so for me, then, while we're on Grichuk, this brings me into, I think, the last part note I have on lineup business, which is, of course, Jason Hayward. And not just the lineup, of course, but the idea of the contract. If there does, if Grichuk turns into this power guy that they believe, I mean, one of the most fun guys you've courted all spring has been Mabry, just being like, okay, this guy,
the Lamborghini.
Yeah, you know, yeah, he like loses his mind about Grichuk's power. It's awesome, yeah. Particularly when Mabry has received criticism, fair or otherwise, about not valuing power enough. To see him lose his mind over Grichuk has been very kind of exciting to watch. But that begs the question: the Cardinals just traded for a superstar right fielder who, in a lot of ways, many people think could be the bridge to the next young generation of Cardinal stars if they are able to sign him. Obviously, no one's talking.
Where did you read that?
I don't know. I don't know. I feel like all I know is I do have family members that have grabbed the print paper for me today.
Yeah.
Because it is a 2015 Cardinal season preview on Sunday when we talk about this. So I don't know where I read it. It was probably just some blogger.
Okay.
But anyway, the point is, obviously,
I just assumed it was on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. No, no, of course, of course. That's the place that pays all of us. So of course that's
right,
that's
right.
Where we put everything.
And that's where that's the place to go for big thoughts.
Of course, and detailed complex conversations.
Right, right, right.
So, but when it comes to Hayward, let's put Grichuk aside. Let's just talk about the Hayward contract. Do you think they'll start talking early in the year? Is there any sense from that? I know there's the idea that get him out there and start playing, then he'll love it and so on. But, you know, it's people do that, but it's not Mark McGwire in 1997 anymore. Like, it's a different time. Hayward is 25. This is a huge contract he's got coming. The idea that he's going to be like, hey, I love it here, discount, to me, doesn't strike me as something that's going to happen. Where are the both
Why?
Sides? Maybe a slight discount, but this is a massive contract he's got hanging over here.
Yeah, you know, but one way to always let a guy know what he's worth is to let him hit the open market.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like Holiday, for example, like the card like that worked with Holiday. But Holiday, they paid market price, and I think they ended up getting a great deal. But they certainly paid market price when they got him. It feels like no matter how much Hayward loves it, it feels like they're going to have to pay market price.
Right. And what would be different now that isn't – like, here's the thing is if you make a deal now because they know what market price is, then both sides are dreaming on what he'll become, right?
Right.
If you make that same deal at the end of the season, then at least you'll have a season to go, hey, we just saw what he can become. You know, and it takes away the dream aspect of it because – what kind of hitter is Hayward? Well, right now, I mean, he doesn't have an at-bat in the regular season, and people are going, well, maybe he could be a 20-20 guy. Yeah, 20-20. He could steal 20 bases and hit 20 home runs. Okay, that's great. He hit, what, 11 last season. Now, he's going to enter his peak, but right now all you kind of have is like hints and whispers and general sense of the tools he has. And, I mean, you have this like – you have this, you have like this amazing block of marble, and the artist has started kind of sketching out what it's going to become, but hasn't started chiseling into it yet. Give it 6 months, and you're going to have a pretty good sense of where the direction of the statue is going that you didn't have today. And maybe last year was his career. And maybe that's what he's going to be. And that's a tremendous player. But that's not a player that today you would dream about signing to a $200 million deal. Whereas that's what it would command. So I think there's a mutual it's mutually beneficial for Hayward not to sit here, and I don't think he is, and dream about what it could be like to be a Cardinal core player and play in baseball heaven and all this stuff that he would be doing on his side. And on the other side, the Cardinals can go to the agent and say, "Hey, what would it take to sign him now?" And they can present a price, and the Cardinals could go and go, "All right, that's interesting, because that's probably what it's going to take to sign him at the end of the year. Only we'll have had a whole year to see if he's actually that player."
But isn't it interesting that if it turns out that he is a 20 or 25 homer guy, which is also happens to be precisely what the Cardinals could really use in 2004, in 2015.
Exactly.
But if he turns out to be that guy, doesn't that raise his price? Like, wouldn't you if the Cardinals believe he can be that guy? I know maybe they do and maybe they don't, but it feels like it's a weird kind of thing. If he has exactly the year the Cardinals really would love him to have, it actually costs them for not signing him earlier before that drives up his price. Because
See,
yes,
I don't agree,
okay.
because this is, and maybe it will, but this is how the Cardinals operate, okay? The Cardinals assign a dollar figure to what they think the production and return they're going to get from Hayward is, okay? So they've already figured that out, and they've already made the trade. They already figure, okay, this is the value we're going to get from this guy. Now, the more information they can accumulate, the more they can understand what the value is for that next year and that next contract. And while they don't quite know where the market is going, they certainly have a really good sense of it with the deal for Ellsbury, the deal for, I mean, you dial it way back and you can go to Teixeira, the deal for Stanton. They know the, and I'm not saying that he's a $300 million player. I'm just saying that Stanton's deal helps set the market for what guys are going. Now, if Hayward goes out and has a Stanton-esque year, then you're exactly right. And good luck to him. And the Cardinals benefited from a historic, amazing year. And he'll go off and he'll make millions in pinstripes. But, he's not, he doesn't profile like Stanton. He profiles more like, some of these other guys that we've seen who certainly in the market are pressing up towards 200. But even like, I think we're all like, even when we have this conversation, we're kind of proving the point of being patient, because we see him now as a potential $200 million player. If he goes out and has the season that we're like projecting on him, Will, he's a $200 million player. So the price, what would he have to do for him to be worth more than what would already be the asking price now?
Yeah, and if he lowers his price, it means he's had a terrible year, and we're not gonna. And like the only way
Well,
that
maybe
price go,
that's
right?
right.
That's the only way the price goes down is if he has a lousy year, which really hurts the Cardinals and may sour the Cardinals on him anyway.
Right, or they say, "Hey, you know what? We'll give you a qualifying offer, and you come back."
Right.
I mean, look, there, and also these deals are getting pretty complex. So a guy who is going to be 26 in his first crack at free agency, he may sign a 10-year deal, but there's going to be a 5-year opt
Right,
out.
that's the way it works there. Right.
So really, you're like, okay, well, the Cardinal, what are they? It's like, what, in for a penny, in for a pound? That's the old phrase,
That
right?
right. Yep.
Okay, so really with Hayward, it's more like in for a penny, maybe in for a dime.
Right.
But then he turns 31, so I mean, there's a lot of different ways for this thing to go, but it's completely mutually beneficial for them, for both sides, to not sit across the table at this point and go, "Well, let's dream up what may happen in the next 6 months, and we'll give best case scenario," when they can sit there and go, "You know what?
Let's see what
After
happens.
3 months, 4 months, we have a pretty good idea where this is headed."
And the last thing on that too, like the thing about that trade is so funny because it's another one of those. It's like the perfect Mo move because a trade that really no one like you had floated the idea of it, I believe, at one point in something, but really it is not something that had gotten a ton of traction. Not a lot of people were talking about, and then they just announced it, and then you looked, you're like, "Oh, wow, that makes absolute sense. I totally like and not only makes sense for this year, but that kind of kismet that you're talking about of, okay, both sides kind of have a, all right, let's prove it. Like that's, yeah. that it works out for both sides. So
it does.
It really kind of perfect trade in that typical kind of Mo move. The last thing about the team I want to talk about before we get into my next to final topic. We have three topics left. The one minor thing I don't want to get into too much detail on this, but I figure we have to talk about the bullpen because we don't talk about the bullpen, it'll explode and everyone will be like, wow, you guys had this long Cardinal preview and never brought up the bullpen. So let's bring up the bullpen. I feel like Rosenthal causes more people worry than he should. I think that he scares people, but he's a much better closer than he's given credit for. And to me, that Walden move, I don't know why. I felt like the Braves throwing him in was very similar to the Angels throwing in Grichuk. Like, I feel like this trade would have been somewhat similar. I feel like the trade would have been almost even if they hadn't have done that. But, like, bringing in Walden is kind of the masterstroke of that trade because it fixes, like, a lot of stuff. It lets you put Martinez in the rotation or swing or whatever he's going to do. And Walden is – it's even a backup option if something blows up with Rosenthal.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree. I mean, I'm not going to go overboard and say it was like getting Grichuk.
Right.
Because it's not
one to one, but it's the guy that's not the showcase of the deal,
right?
That comes in the back door ends up being one of the strongest guys that you get.
I think if Walden isn't part of that deal, the Cardinals have a far harder time making that deal. Whereas if Grichuk isn't part of the Angels deal, they just take the next guy that the Angels offer. Right. It was kind of like, hey, we're going to ask for Grichuk, and they're going to say no, and then we'll get somebody else. Well, let's call him up. Hey, we'd like Randall Grichuk. Yes. Wait, they said yes? What? What's going on here? Wait a minute. Okay. But whereas Walden was a very priority, and then they flipped that into a two-year deal with an option for Walden. So because – and you may be tired of me saying this. I certainly know a lot of people who frequent the chat are tired of me saying this, but control years matter.
No, please.
And you can line up a lot of trades by the control years, and – Walden helps balance that ledger quite a bit. So that adds to what you're presenting is that not only does he solve a lot of things in the bullpen or make the bullpen look considerably different, but he helps balance that trade in terms of years of control. So I think the biggest question with the bullpen is the left side.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I figure they must have thought Seagrass was all right if they traded Freeman.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. So is he? I mean, that's a question. I mean, they're putting a lot on him, but they also have an option in Marco Gonzalez that can be pretty successful, you know, or probably could handle that role, certainly. And then the question is with Choate, you know, are you going to use him as a lefty specialist or try to expand his horizons like last year? Clearly, the addition of Matt Belisle was made so that Matheny doesn't have the temptation of using Randy Choate in a spot where Matt Belisle will fit, and Choate can be a loogie in all senses of the word there, you know, just a real true specialist.
All right, well, this brings me into my really last topic. I was going to get into the Cubs and Pirates coming minutes because I really feel like I heard you on the Baseball Perspectives podcast, and I generally agree that the Cardinals-Cubs thing that's coming is like I've been waiting for this since I was 10 years old.
Oh, it's fantastic.
I've been waiting for a Cardinals Cubs playoff series or Planet Chase, or I've been waiting for it for forever. I'm right on the Cardinals Cubs dividing line. I went to the University of Illinois. They're all Cubs fans there. I've been waiting for this for so long. So I was going to get into that and also like how generally underrated the Pirates are in that and so on, but we've run a little long, so I'm going to focus on the last thing. I have a few questions, and this maybe
you can have another talk sometime about the Cubs.
Yeah, and that is because like I feel like that is that not only and you talked about the, I've heard you talk about this too about how with Bernie about how there's a contrast between the way the Cardinals have built their roster,
how
the Cubs have built it in power and pitching, and that's a Derek Gould thought that one of the many founts of wisdom that if we had all the time in the world, we would just dip a bung into your brain and it'd be constant Derek Gould wisdom coming out. But but we got to get on my hobby horse just to close out to close out here. It is worth noting. Okay. Not to the way last season ended. The way last season ended, it would be fair to say there was some criticism of not only the move slash moves that led up to that, but even some of the mindsets to the move. And there does seem, particularly toward the second half of the season, there did, from trade deadline on, and even now when you're talking about Belial and Choate, there does seem to be not a disconnect, because clearly everyone's on the same page. I don't think, no one's saying that Matheny's job is in any danger, but it does seem to be on many different cases. There's a lot of, I joked at the time of the Craig trade that, like, don't think of this as a trade. Think of this as Mo putting a dog collar around Matheny so he does not bite himself. I think there's an argument to be made that there's a lot.
You're talking about like a cone?
Yeah, like a cone. Yes, like a, oh, okay. Stop putting Craig in the lineup. I will trade him if I have to, so you stop doing it. Here's the cone around your neck.
Okay.
We see this with the Belial Choate move.
That's quite a visual. Thank you.
Yeah, I know, exactly. The listen, I will just put a copy of the Matheny Manifesto there so he can read it under the cone. The point is I mean, no disrespect to the man, by all means. I think everybody admires him, everybody likes him, and certainly the way that he handled the Tavares thing, I think everyone was very kind of blown away by how kind of great that was.
Yep.
But to be clear, that move last year was pretty shocking, I think, universally around the board. Was there any backlash to that? Is David Bell here to help with game management? Yeah. Is there any sort of, for all the good stuff that Matheny brings to the table, the leadership, the players adoring him, fitting in well with the mindset, is there a thought in the front office that we need to see more progress in the game management, or do they think that's progressing okay?
Well, can it be both?
Yes, absolutely, it can be both.
Okay. I that move with Waka last year, there have been, I mean, I can think of only a handful of times, right? I mean, most of the time when you're a reporter and you're covering a team, and you're asked the questions of the manager assumes that it's hindsight. Like, they're asking questions about this move because of the result of the move, not because anybody up there in the press box has any sense of the game and has the foresight. And I have suggested to Matheny that if he really feels that way, that he is welcome to carry a pager to the mound.
Right.
And I will happily just buzz him when I'm like, look, man, this move, I'm going to ask you about it later. Just so you, on the record, I'm going to ask you about it later.
That would be
fun. I don't know how it's going
to
go.
Yeah, I'm sure that would bring a smile to his face every time he got that bus.
I'm sure. And I say that, you know, somewhat facetiously to say, look, we're not only hindsight folks. You know, we're not, I mean, obviously we have the gift of hindsight because we see what happens. But also, we're just not allowed to meet you at the mound to ask the question.
right.
Okay? I think the Waka move was such that it was different in the sense that as it was happening, and, you know, Twitter being like it is nowadays, I would like to go back, and you can do this, and certainly somebody will go back and do this, but to see the tweets from, specifically from the folks who are around the team all the time, And I'd like to recall mine verbatim. I hope that it said something along the lines of, this is the time you use him.
Right, yeah.
You know?
I'm not going back and reading those tweets.
Okay. I've been through it. Right, for your sanity. All right, well,
yes.
But inevitably somebody will listen to this and then email me with it.
Right,
whatever.
Right. Of course.
But
of course.
Regardless, I think that was one of those cases where we saw it happening. We're like, this is no way,
right?
You know, and then we're told the backstory of it, which there was one, and we're still like, no way, how does that all happen? And the manager, to his credit, at least sitting in that office later, I think recognized that we weren't asking him about hindsight, that we were all there in the moment going, what? And I think that actually is, not to put too much emphasis on questions or the value of them. But I think that's a conversation that certainly he'd had before with the front office. But after that night took on a different tone. And certainly his answers to our questions took on a different tone. Even a week later when we had the kind of post-season wrap up, the autopsy on the year, the way he answered that question was different than, say, the dismissive, you guys are just talking in hindsight. And so I bring all that up mainly to say that, you know, he talked to us this spring about how he recognized, having never been in the role before, that there were qualities of a manager that he was going to have to learn on the job. And he was prepared for some of them. He felt that dealing with the media as much as he has to was something he was only going to understand and get a feel for while being on the job. He could prepare only to a certain point, but eventually you just have to learn to do it on the job. Being a leader, galvanizing a clubhouse, being protective of the players, those are all things that he came to the job naturally with and has only evolved. It's not like he had to learn how to do it. How to protect players in comments, how to tell the truth within a comment but not the whole truth within a comment, that's something that he's learned over time. So I bring those things together to say that strategy is something that he has described as something that he's going to learn, that he's had to learn on the job. How to handle a bullpen, how to utilize that guy that he insists on having in the playoffs, whether it's Shelby Miller or Michael Wacha. It's a dead spot on the roster. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy spot on the roster where you put a pitcher who you only want to use in an emergency, and in the playoffs, you'll never recognize that there's an emergency because, damn it, you're going to win that game, and it's not an emergency, so we can't go to the guy who's an emergency because that's a white flag, and I'm not giving up on this game yet. So it becomes this guy who is under glass and you never want to use because you never want to admit that you're in a spot where you have to use him. So why have that on the roster? And so I think, you know, through the front office spent time talking to him this year, this winter. They've talked to him in the past. They've had long conversations with him about, hey, what are you going to do here? What do you think here? You know, and he's not a guy who necessarily likes to have a post hoc, you know, after the game. He doesn't like to go back over the game with members of the front office or coach. You know, he'd rather let it simmer on his own. He takes copious notes. He's a relentless journaler. And I think I know in talking to him, he has gone back over last season and tried to pull lessons from that. And the front office has tried to go to him and say, well, how can we help you, either provide you with information that helps you make this decision or helps you evaluate how you made this decision? And you mentioned David Bell. I think it'll be interesting because he does bring a different voice. Aldo, Mike Aldretti was a guy left over from Tony's regime here. Very smart guy, but was a really strong liaison between the manager and the clubhouse. Had a really good way of connecting with players of every type of personality. And the example I give is there were some guys when Mark McGwire was the hitting coach who, you know, Mark's kind of approach just didn't resonate with. That's not to say his approach to hitting. I meant just his approach as a coach. You know, I mean, there are teachers that resonate with us and there are teachers that resonate with our friends, and they're not always the same teachers. Aldo was able to reach those other guys because they had different personalities. And so Aldo had this really nice kind of gift for being a liaison, a different kind of voice, a more approachable voice, whether it was the assistant hitting coach or the bench coach. I think David Bell brings some of that. But I also think David has a feistiness. In fact, I've heard other coaches, I know he has a feistiness. And Matheny just told me once this spring that David burns hot inside. And And Bell kind of explained to me what he meant by that, that he has his view of how the game is supposed to go and isn't real interested in hearing, you know, he has some really tried and true beliefs, and he'll happily debate them, but he'll be intent on winning that debate. And I think that'll be a real interesting kind of dynamic. So you have all these things coming together. A manager who really has publicly said he's open to learning, and he recognizes that there have been mistakes strategically in the past and that he has to learn from them. A front office that has said, all right, maybe we can't just talk to him about this stuff. Maybe we need to go and say, all right, how can we help you learn? What information do we provide? Or how can we set up a scenario so that you can advance on this? And then a bench coach who's going to come with some preconceived notions of how a game or how things should be handled, and we'll have to kind of mold that into being a lobbyist as much as a bench coach.
Do you think, if this is my last question on this,
sorry for the long answer.
No, please. But listen, I could do a 3-hour podcast on this. We're not going to. But my last question on this, and then we'll go into trivia because I've kept you so long already. Do you think that when we saw that Waka move, and again, if like, you know, when we all said what do you think the front office did that? Do you think Mo did that? Do you think Mo saw that and like, what is he doing?
I think the organization did that.
Yeah.
So, if they weren't watching.
Right.
I mean, how do you see a guy not get used for 2 weeks and then all of a sudden the game is on the line? Your season is in the balance. And you go, you know what?
Now.
The guy that we yesterday publicly said we couldn't find a spot for because too much is on the line in the playoffs, now we're putting him in to throw the pitches that determine the season.
What do you think what I never quite understood? Because you talked about how he gave the explanation the next day. What exactly, did he give a progressive the mindset, or did he just kind of shoulder you?
No. He explained it. Again, he explained it. Now you can debate it. Okay.
Right,
so if I explain it, and there'll be people on the podcast go, oh, Derek's defending. No, I'm explaining.
This is just what he said. Right.
This is what he said. And again, you can debate the merits of it, but he did have a reason. Marco Gonzalez was unavailable that game. And so as they sorted out what that meant, they had to move somebody into Marco's role, and they had to move somebody into Waka's role. Now here's the point where you can debate, okay, they had ruled out Marco Gonzalez that day, all right? Mm-hmm. So take him off the table. He had worked too much. He was a young pitcher. They felt like if they put him in out there again, they risked having him be ineffective for a lot longer and possibly ineffective in that moment just out of sheer fatigue. So they moved Waka into Gonzalez's role, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Lance Lynn into Waka's role. The debate that you should have at that point is, why isn't Lance Lynn in Gonzalez's room?
Right.
If you're going to go, at what point in time do you look down to the bullpen and go, okay, this is the inning where if they score a run, our season is over.
Right.
Done. And you have two choices, Lance Lynn or Michael Waka. Who doesn't go with Lance Lynn?
Yeah.
And so I think what happened was they never thought about it in those terms, because they had before the game assigned these kind of roles. And when that number came up or that situation came up that they would have gone to Marco, because they would have gone to Marco in that spot.
Right.
They went to the guy who replaced Marco before the game, which was Waka. And what they didn't factor in then was, oh, yeah, by the way, the season could end.
Right. I'm sorry I brought this up, but yeah, it was a bit such a positive podcast and to end in the depth in the sad thing they did last year, but it did
Well, no,
feel,
I think this is a positive discussion, though, because.
you know, I hope it is. You know,
Yeah.
I hope it is. But like, I mean, it is worth noting, you know, this was a concern. You know, this was a concern initially, even with all the good cheer about Matheny's hiring and how he felt it felt right, and it did feel right in a lot of ways. The concern was, you know, for a team that's competing for championships now with these guys in its prime, how much on the job learning do you really want to do? Particularly when, I mean, you can make an argument about how much on the job strategic learning has happened when this we've now finished 3 years.
I think
And
there's actually been quite a bit,
I
you
think
know.
there has too. I think it's, I mean, to me, the largest improvement was from year one to year two. I feel like year two, I feel like there was a definite improvement year two. I there was, never minding just the bunting,
Yeah.
never minding just the bunting, but I agree, you did see a step forward, but it does feel, we don't have to get the details on this, but it does feel like, you know, it's, you hope the process is ongoing. Let's put it that way.
Well, I mean, yeah, I would say two things. One, we're not always privy to all of the information that he has, and we're certainly not privy to the interpretation that he has of that information. I do think that, you know, he's done a better job of letting us know the thoughts behind his moves, and especially when you're talking about from year one to year two. The more understanding the public has of the nuances that go into a decision or the reasons that go into a decision, the more accepting they're going to be of those decisions. That doesn't mean that the decision was better. It means the explanation of how he arrived at the decision was better. And I think there's more of that going on. And that was something that Tony always excelled at when you think about it. It wasn't that he didn't make mistakes, because all managers make mistakes. They all make a call that blows up in their face, or they feel as a gut move and everything like that. But Tony really excelled at always having a reason that led to that decision. So I think there's I think that's part of it.
All right. Well, Derek, I we could have gone 4 hours, but we actually have other. You may have other. When do you go? So when do you leave? When do you get to Chicago?
I go to Chicago. Well, I have to go to Memphis
All
first.
right. Of course. Right. I always forget about the Memphis game.
Yeah.
That feels like it gets rained out every year anyway.
Well, I'm going to go there for a rain out then.
Right.
I still have to be there.
Right. Of course. Of course. Of course. Of course. Of course.
Yeah.
But,
Much as I would like to say, I can watch that one on TV with sitting by my son in St. Louis and cover it just the same. It doesn't work that way.
Well, for as much as for what it's worth, we can talk about the Rams in Memphis. At least they have a wall. At least they have stands in the outfield. But let's not
Wow.
get into that.
Is that
Let's
a
not get into
Wrigley shot?
that's not a Wrigley shot. That is an actual fact of the situation about Wrigley right now. So I can't believe that's how. Yeah, I mean, I know Al Yellen, who runs the Cubby Blue blog, Big Cubby Blue blog, and he has been documenting that as well as anyone. How much of a mess that situation is.
Is
Like,
he the guy behind the Gould to Chicago Twitter?
oh, I don't know. I don't know. As I didn't. Oh, I hope. I don't. Let's not let that happen. Like, I you you're come on. We've the brain, there's been enough brain drain in the Cardinals organization over the last few years.
Wow.
We can't
Yeah.
lose you. We can't lose you.
Okay.
All right,
Thanks,
Derek.
Scott.
Thank you so much. I will. By the way, I will be in New York for the Cardinals series this year. So
All right, very
I
good.
know it's always hard, but if you end up having a Foley's night, I'm sure I'm
Are you
sure I'll.
writing a sequel? Will we have a sequel?
Oh,
Can
yeah.
we have another part of your chapter of your book, of your next book?
I think America has suffered enough, Derek.
Okay. What's the trivia here?
Well, we're gonna do that. I'm gonna wrap up here. I'm gonna say goodbye, and then we're gonna do trivia. But
Okay.
so first off, that's a separate, smaller podcast, much smaller, I swear,
Okay.
podcast. But first off, thank you for doing this. Thank you
Yeah.
for hanging in with me. And this was as great as always. Everyone, if you're not following Derek Gould on Twitter, and I'm sure every Cardinal fan already is, at D Gould, DGOOLD, and everyone should, every any baseball fan should follow Derek. And of course, you can see his work in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch STL today. Derek, thank you very much. This is Will Experience. Music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We'll be back on, I believe, in 2 days now to do Derek Gould's trivia, which we're actually going to do right now.